Good morning and happy Friday. I'm Cheryl Walker with the News Gazette. Today is Friday, November 22nd, 2024, and we'll begin part one of the News Gazette reading with the headline story, Family Seeks Removal of Landmark Designation. They argue it's making the sale difficult, property is too run down, area around it has become too commercial. This story was written by Jana Weiserman. That's Jay Weiserman at newsgazette.com. Champaign. Two women are asking that the city lift its local landmark status on a house that has been in their family for over a century, as they believe the designation and the restrictions that come with it have made it difficult to sell the home. Deborah Cox and Mary Wanyer are seeking to have the landmark designation for 212 East University Avenue in Champaign removed and have submitted an application to the city's planning and development department to this effect. We believe that a redesignation of the property would give potential buyers the further option of demolishing the structure in order to use the land for commercial interests in keeping with the current use of the section of the city, they wrote. According to the City of Champaign, a local landmark designation protects properties from demolition or exterior alteration, which negatively affects the historic character of the property. Marilyn Wanyer, who successfully applied for the landmark designation in 1998, died in her home on December the 8th, 2023, at the age of 101. Cox is her daughter, and Mary Wanyer is her daughter-in-law. The two women are co-trustees of the Marilyn Wanyer Self-Declaration of Trust. The home on East University Avenue is currently listed with Keller Williams Realty. The Real Estate Center of Illinois is asking a price of $330,000. It has four bedrooms and two bathrooms. Though the house has been listed by Keller Williams for 3 months beginning in July, no one has made an offer to purchase a property with the understanding that they would be assuming the responsibilities of a landmark property, Cox and Mary Wanyer wrote, according that the available incentives for the site have not been to sweeten the deal. In addition to its local designation, the residence was added to the National Register of Historic Places in 2011. The News Gazette reported at the time that the home was the latest single-family owner-occupied residence on East University Avenue. Local architect Seely Brown designed the house in 1893. Brown's other local projects of note including the design of Champaign's first city hall and fire department. Karen Coomer, with the Preservation and Conservation Association, who convinced the Illinois Historic Sites Advisory Council to recommend the home's inclusion on the National Register, found in her research that the home was built by Henry C. Aarons, a local saloon operator and liquor wholesaler. The house has remained in his family's possession ever since. According to a guest commentator by Pace Executive Director Tom Garzer and two members of the organization's advocacy committee, adherents left the house to his daughter Anna Aarons Devine. Devine later willed the home to her husband Walter and her sister Bertha. Walter Divin later married Lillian Swick, and the couple gave birth to Marilyn. Per a description from the city's list of local landmarks, the adherents' house is an excellent local example of the Queen Anne architectural style and is unique in having its original carriage barn and wrought iron fencing intact. It also is one of the few surviving buildings that can be definitely linked to the pioneering local architect, Seely Brown. The integrity of the house is unparalleled. Not only do original light and plumbing fixtures remain, but also the original Lincrusta Walton type interior decoration. Cox and Mary Wanyer said Champaign senior planner Eric Von Bursig informed them that in order to get the property redesignated, they must demonstrate that it is no longer historically significant under the criteria for designation landmarks on the zoning ordinance. The two women wrote that they believe that the home no longer meets the criteria to fulfill its original designation. For instance, the house was found to be a representative of the distinguished characteristics of an architectural type inherently valuable for the study of a period style, craftsmanship, method of construction, or use of indigenous materials. Cox and Wanya argue that the house has never been used for the purpose of study since its 1998 designation and is now neglected to the point of the distinguishing features have been seriously degraded. Their letter to the city included pictures of decaying wood on the home's porch, wood shingles that are curling and falling off the porch roof, moss growing on the roof, peeling plaster on interior walls, and an exterior decoration that has fallen off due to rotting wood. The adherence house was last renovated by Marilyn Wanyer in 1990s and, with the exception of being repainted in 2015, has not been given much attention. The two women wrote, The distinguishing characteristics are now in dire need of renovation and restoration. However, the owner of the property is deceased, leaving no financial means by which the property can continue to be kept in any condition for study. They added that her will did not include a mandate to maintain the property according to the requirements in the city's ordinance or landmark designations. Additionally, the two women noted that the East University Avenue is now a commercial artery and the home is overshadowed by neighboring businesses. Cox added that during the time she spent living in the home as her mother's caregiver, she had difficulty sleeping due to constant traffic and noise in the area, as well as sirens from Carl Arbor, ambulance service next door, and other emergency responders. The current use of land in this area makes it impossible for anyone to live or conduct businesses in this antiquated home, however historically significant, she said. For a typical landmark designation request, an application is first reviewed by the Champaign Historic Preservation Commission. If it decides that the property is eligible for nomination to become a landmark, it forwards the nomination to the Champaign Planning Commission for a public hearing. The Plan Commission then votes to recommend that the City Council approve or deny the nomination, with the Council making the final decision. While the applicants in this particular case are seeking instead to remove the landmark designation, Van Bursick said it will go through the same process. This Historic Preservation Commission will review the application at its meeting at 4 p.m. on December the 5th. Parkland College, President locked in with Ray's two-year extension by Jeff DeLasso. That's Jay DeLasso at NewsGazette.com. Champaign, the head of one area college campus is sticking around a while, bucking the trend of recent higher headlines. Parkland College trustee this week signed off on an $18,000 a year raise and two-year extension for second-year president Pam Liu, whose new deal would keep her on the Champaign campus through June 30th, 2028. The news comes during a time of transition locally. Robert Jones announced last week that this will be his final school year as a chancellor at the University of Illinois, and Stephen Nocco is stepping down next month as Danville Area Community College president following a dispute with the city's mayor. Law succeeded Tom Ramage as Parkland president in January of 2023. Her original contract, a four-year deal that ran through December 31st, 2026, paid her a base salary of $300,000. She'll earn $318,000 annually under the amended contract. On Thursday, Lyle said many things remain on her to-do list, starting with expanding community outreach to help prospective students and their families understand the many pathways in post-secondary education that are available to them as they seek to build brighter futures. Just in October, the college announced agreements with Southern Illinois University Carbondale to allow Parkland students to earn a bachelor's degree remotely and at a lower cost with the Millikan University, which will automatically accept associate degree recipients with GPAs as of 2.0 or higher and put them on a two-year track to bachelor's degrees. Last month, Parkland also announced plans to further train and develop future collision repair technicians with the Champaign-Urbana Mass Transit District, sponsoring a full apprenticeship at its bus maintenance facility. Partnerships with employers in a number of fields are the name of the game in preparing a pipeline of skilled workers to work in growing and in-demand industries such as precision, fermentation, and manufacturing, aviation, and healthcare, Lyle said Thursday. Another priority expanding the college's RISE Scholars Program, aimed at underrepresented student groups. As a community college, we serve many low-income, first-generation students, Lyle said. To help these students find realistic ways to meet their college aspirations, we will grow student support programs like our RISE initiative and expand collaborations with our school district partners. History. Area history in 1924, Ray Gavelin won second place among the immortals for his touchdown on a 35-yard run in the first quarter. That enabled the Gringolis Illini to defeat Ohio State 7-0. The result dispelled the prevailing theory that Illinois cannot win without Grange, and also the generally common notion that they'd never come back. In 1974, about 50 people protested Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, recruitment on the University of Illinois campus, with a demonstration at the Illini Union and a march to the Engineering Placement Office, where the CIA had been conducting interviews. In 2009, it may be unexpected given the national recession, but records show new housing construction in Savoy was up substantially in 2009. Savoy saw about 74 single-family housing starts through November the 13th. International history, today's highlight. On November the 22nd, 1963, John F. Kennedy, the 35th President of the United States, was shot to death during a motorcade in Dallas, Texas, Governor John B. Connally, riding in the same car as Kennedy, was seriously wounded. Suspect gunman Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested by President Lyndon B. Johnson, was sworn in as president. On this date in 1718, English pirate Edward Teach, better known as Blackbeard, was killed during a battle off what is now North Carolina. In 1935, a flying boat, the China Clipper, took off from Alamito, California, carrying more than 100,000 pieces of mail on the first Trans-Pacific Airmail flight. In 1986, 20-year-old Mike Tyson became the youngest heavyweight boxing champion in history, stopping WBC title holder Trevor Burbick in the second round of the championship bout in Las Vegas. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy staff writer Luke Taylor. Bellying Up on Fridays will spotlight the men and women serving up cold ones and conversation in our neck of the woods. Let us know about your favorite bartender by emailing itaylor@newsgazette.com. Ben Donaldson was nominated for his work at the Esquire, but Champagne's bar goers may have received a drink from him at any number of locations in his decade-long bartending career. Even now, he's working at the Esquire and nearby Brass Rail. Donaldson worked fast food before his first bartending job, and said that fast-paced environment prepared him well, but the bar clientele is a whole lot better. I've always been kind of a barfly, so being on the other side of the bar was an interesting experience, he said. Donaldson is also known around these parts as a drummer. He's been providing the beats for a local act, the Decadents, for longer than he's been bartending. That comes after some all-state honors as a jazz band drummer at Champaign Central High School and playing with the Marching Illini in college. He recommends the title track and every other song from their latest album, Lost in Translation, but said an older song, I'd Rather Be Lonely, sees the most radio play. It's pretty awesome. I turn on the radio and then he says, hey, wait, that's me, Donaldson said. The band also gets to play at the Esquire fairly often, which Donaldson says he's grateful for. He's worked in other parts of town, but is unhappy to be back downtown because of his favorite thing about bartending is the people he works with. It's all one big family. No matter where you work, we all know each other. Donaldson said, we give each other heads up about any goings on downtown, whether it be events or people, to keep an eye on. It's really nice that camaraderie between the band and the bartending. Donaldson definitely describes himself as a night owl. He's happy to spend free time hanging out with his cats. Daybook, Almanac. There are 39 days left in the year. Notable birthdays, actor filmmaker Terry Gilman is 84. Hockey Hall of Famer Jacque Lapierre is 83. Astronaut Gwan Buford is 82. Tennis Hall of Famer Billie Jean King is 81. Rock musician, actor Stephen Van Zandt is 74. Rock musician Tina Weymouth, Talking Heads, is 74. Actor Richard Kine is 68. Actor Jamie Lee Curtis is 66. Actor Mads Mikkelsen is 59. Actor Mark Ruffalo is 57, and Tennis Hall of Famer Boris Becker is 57. Actor Scarlett Johansson is 40. Actor Eldon Erkrich is 35. Actor Darcy Montgomery is 30. Lotteries. Thursday's Illinois Lottery Pick 3 midday is 338. Pick 3 evening 863. Pick 4 midday 0494. Pick 4 evening is 7239, and the Lucky Day Lotto midday is 9, 10, 11, 16, and 31. The Lucky Day Lotto evening is 17, 19, 27, 32, and 34. The Lotto is 11, 19, 23, 37, and 38. The estimated jackpot is $5.3 million. Thursday's Hoosier Lottery daily 3 midday is 325. Daily 4 midday is 8843. The estimated Lotto jackpot is $30 million. Friday's Mega Millions estimated jackpot is $453 million. Saturday's Powerball estimated jackpot is $171 million. If you need the lotteries that we don't have by the press time, contact Illinois Lottery Information 1-800-252-1775. That's illinoislottery.com. Thursday's Hoosier Lottery daily 3-day midday was 325, and the daily 4 midday is 8843. Estimated lottery jackpot is $30 million. Friday's Mega Millions estimated jackpot is $453 million. Saturday's Powerball estimated jackpot is $171 million. Hoosier Lottery information is 1-800-95-LOTTO, HoosierLottery.com. The FBI, DHS leaders won't testify publicly about national security threats. Washington's AP. The leaders on the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security declined to testify publicly at a scheduled Senate committee hearing Thursday on global threats to national security, a break from standard protocol of open testimony before the panel. Their choice to not provide public testimony about their department's efforts to address wide-ranging national security threats robs the American people of critical information and the opportunity for public accountability of what the federal government is doing to keep Americans safe. Senator Gary Peters, chairman of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, said in the statement. The Michigan Democrat said it was the first time in than 15 years that an FBI director and Homeland Security secretary had together refused to offer public testimony at the annual committee hearing, focused on threats to the homeland, calling it a shocking departure from tradition. A separate hearing scheduled for Wednesday before the House Homeland Security Committee also was postponed. The hearing were to have taken place at the time a significant political transition as Trump is interviewing candidates to replace the FBI director, Chris Wray, and has named South Dakota Governor Kristen Noem to succeed Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. The threats hearing are opportunity for members of Congress to hear from these agencies about what they see as key threats facing the nations, ranging from weapons of mass destruction to natural disasters. Mideast conflict. Gunmen fire on vehicles carrying Shiites in Pakistan, killing at least 42. Pakistan gunmen opened fire on vehicles carrying Shiite Muslims and Pakistanis residents northwest Thursday, killing at least 42 people, including 6 women, and wounding 20 others. One of the region's deadliest such attacks in recent years, police said. The attack happened in Karam, a district in Khyber Pakhtunkhwa province, where a sectarian clashes between majority Sunni Muslims and minority Shiites have killed dozens of people in recent months. No one immediately claimed responsibility for the latest attack. It came a week after authorities reopened a key highway in the region that had been closed for weeks following deadly clashes. Local police officials, Ali, said several vehicles were traveling in a convoy from the city of Parshanir to Peshawar, the capital of Khyber Pakhtunkhwa. When gunmen opened fire, he said at least 10 passengers were in critical condition at a hospital. Afab Alam, a provincial minister, said 42 people were killed in the attack and that officers were investigating to determine who was behind it. Interior Minister Mohan Nakavik called the shooting a terrorist attack. Prime Minister Shahid Sharif and President Asif Ali Zardari condemned the attack, and Sharif said, "Those behind the killing of innocent civilians will go unpunished." Karam resident Mayir Hassim, 35, said he saw 4 gunmen emerge from a vehicle and open fire on buses and cars. "I think other people were also firing at the convoy of vehicles from nearby open farm fields," he said. The firing continued for about 40 minutes, he said. He hid under the attackers, fled. "I heard cries of women and people were shouting for help," he said. Ibini al-Bangish, a relative of one of the victims, described the convoy attack as the saddest day in Karam's history. Russia's Ukraine war. Putin-Moscow attack Ukraine with new missile West can't stop. The Kremlin fired a new intermediate-range ballistic missile at Ukraine on Thursday in response to Kyiv's use this week of American and British missiles capable of striking deeper into Russia. President Vladimir Putin said in a televised address to the country, the Russian president warned that U.S. air defense systems would be powerless to stop the new missile, which he said flies at 10 times the speed of sound, and called the Hryshnik Russian for hazelnut tree. He also said it could be used to attack any Ukrainian ally whose missiles are used to attack Russia. "We believe that we have the right to use our weapons against military facilities of the countries that allow to use their weapons against our facilities," Putin said in his first comments since President Joe Biden gave Ukraine the green light this month to use the U.S. ATACMS missile to strike at limited targets inside Russia. Pentagon Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singin confirmed that Russia's missile was new. "This is an experimental type of intermediate-range missiles based on its RS-26 Robuski's intercontinental ballistic missile. This was a new type of lethal capability that was deployed on the battlefield, so that it was certainly of concern," Singin said, noting that the missile could carry either conventional or nuclear warheads. The U.S. was notified ahead of the launch through the nuclear risk reduction channel, she said. The attack on the central Ukraine city of Dnipro came in response to Kyiv's use of longer-range U.S. and British missiles in strikes Tuesday and Wednesday on southern Russia, Putin said. Those strikes caused a fire at an ammunition depot in Russia's Bryansk region and killed and wounded some security services personnel in the Kursk region, he said. In the event of an escalation of aggressive actions, we will respond decisively and in kind, the Russian president said, adding that Western leaders who are hatching plans to use their forces against Moscow should seriously think about this. Putin said the Oryshnik fire Thursday struck a well-known missile factory in Dnipro. He also said Russia would issue advance warnings if it launches more strikes with the Oryshnik against Ukraine to allow civilians to evacuate to safety, something Moscow hasn't done before previous aerial attacks. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov initially said Russia hadn't warned the U.S. about the coming launch of the new missile, noting that it wasn't obligated to do so, but later changed tack and said Moscow did issue a warning 30 minutes before the launch. New administration. Trump picks former Florida Attorney General for federal post after Gates backs out, by Max Greenwood. President-elect Donald Trump on Thursday tapped former Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi as his new pick for the U.S. Attorney General. The announcement made in a post on Trump's social media site, Truth Social, came just hours after the president-elect's first choice for Attorney General, former U.S. Representative Matt Gaetz, withdrew his name from consideration for the job. Gaetz had faced mounting scrutiny over years of old allegations of sex trafficking and drug use that put his confirmation by the U.S. Senate in question. In announcing Bondi as his new choice to lead the Justice Department, Trump pays the former Floridian Attorney General as a very tough on crime, especially when it comes to drug trafficking. For too long, the partisan Department of Justice has been weaponized against me and other Republicans. Not anymore. Trump wrote on the Truth Social, Pam will focus on the DOJ to its intended purpose of fighting crime and making America safe again. I have known Pam for many years. She is smart and tough and an American's first fighter who will do a terrific job as Attorney General. Bondi did not immediately respond to the Miami Herald's request for comment on Thursday evening. Like Gaetz, Bondi has a deep ties to Trump, but she is far more conventional choice for Attorney General than the former congressman, having served two terms as Florida's top law enforcement official from 2011 until 2019. Capital News, Illinois. Dignity and Pay Act. Bill to phase out sub-minimum wage for disabled workers clears General Assembly. A long-awaited bill to stop Illinoisans' organizations from paying sub-minimum wage to workers with disabilities will soon head to Governor J.B. Pritzker's desk after being approved by the Senate on Thursday. The Senate passed the legislation that supported dubbed the Dignity and Pay Act in bipartisan 43-11. It is time to treat people with developmental disabilities the same and have them be paid what they're worth, which is what we pay everybody else. Bill sponsor State Senator Christina Castro, Democrat of Elgin, told the Senate committee on Wednesday. House Bill 793, if signed by the governor, will prohibit businesses and other residential facilities in Illinois from claiming an exemption allowing them to pay workers with disabilities less than a minimum wage. The exemption is known as the 14C certificate, named after the section of the 1938 Fair Labor Standards Act that permits lower wages, certificate holders are allowed to pay a commensurate wage based on the worker's individual productivity in proportion to the wage and productivity of workers who do not have disabilities but are performing the same or similar tasks. Under the bill, Illinoisans have through 2029 to abolish the sub-minimum wage for workers with disabilities. The Illinois House bill approved the bill in May on a bipartisan 78-30 vote following the lengthy negotiations. It would create a transition grant program designed to provide support for organizations to continue employing people with disabilities while paying them at least the minimum wage. It also establishes a task force to oversee transition. Pritzker issued a statement Thursday in support of the bill, which would make Illinois the 19th state to end 14C certified participation. The Dignity and Pay Act is an unprecedented, crucial leap forward to a future where all individuals, regardless of ability, can maximize their talents and contributions to our workforce and earn a fair wage, he said in the statement. Aaron Compton, who was an intellectual disability, told the Senate committee Wednesday that she gets paid minimum wage to work as a greeter for the Chicago Cubs. Some people say that having a job isn't for me because I am not smart enough or good enough to work, Compton said. But I was given an opportunity to work in the community. Illinois has 61 programs currently receiving a federal exemption, according to the U.S. Department of Labor, down from 112 in 2018, according to Ryan Crook, a first assistant deputy governor. The bill had a controversial road to passage. However, the proponents facing opposition from some of the state's largest operators of sheltered work programs, which employ people to work with disabilities to work for less than minimum wage, often performing duties outsourced from other businesses. These organizations and people with family members participating in them argue that the bill will force these programs to end at places they can't afford to pay minimum wage for potentially lower productivity work. State Senator Jill Tracy, Republican of Quincy, who voted against the bill, said during a committee hearing Wednesday that her brother, who has a disability, works for a business shredding paper. How in the world are they going to be able to pay minimum wage is my question. What happens if the shredding paper employment goes away? She asked of the sub-minimum wage work. Hugo Sadotari from the Valley Sheltered Workshop and Bativa said the bill will push families to send their loved ones with disabilities to unaffordable institutions that can't afford to pay people with disabilities at least minimum wage. The 14C programs are the most affordable and flexible options available to families, Sathroyal said. But Castro said argument reinforced why Illinois should in the 14C exemptions after explaining how his organization pays disabled workers less than the rate for the same job at the company that they contract with. You're saying it's okay to pay these folks less. I'll take a cut to employ my people versus, hey, let's work with different agencies. Let's look at different state programs, Cashel said in committee. Partner with those programs because there's a lot of different programs that can help you move from this model to be successful. Many state lawmakers said that they share concerns similar to those of Sathroyal relayed. It's one reason why the parties agreed to create a task force to oversee the wind down of the 14C certificate exemptions and created a 5-year runway. We have to somehow accommodate those that aren't going to be able to be productivity levels to allow a business to contract with, say, a private provider like Valley House Shelter, to keep these workers employed, Tracy said Thursday during a floor debate. Lawmakers who voted against the bill praised its intentions but said their concerns run too deep. I can't vote for a bill, no matter how well-intentioned it is, that I know is going to send pink slips to people in my area, State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Muhammad, said during floor debate. 18 states said that the city of Chicago have ended exemptions with a few negative effects on the programs for people with disabilities, Crick said. In those jurisdictions, the sky did not fall, and people with disabilities and the providers who serve them have new doors open to increase federal funding. They benefit from a focus on meaningful job training, Crick said. Village of Savoy, board member to run against village president, former leader, files for trustee. An incumbent village trustee will run against the current mayor in next year's election, and a former mayor with a long history of public service has decided to return to the village board. According to Savoy Village Administrator Christopher Walton, the following individuals have filed for the 2025 consolidated election. Village president, 4-year term, John Brown. Incumbent, John Nassim. Village trustee, 3 to 4 year terms, Heather Mayen, incumbent, and Larry Kaffner, incumbent, and Joan Disner. Village trustee, 2-year unexpired term, Dennis Donaldson, incumbent. All positions are nonpartisan, Walton said. Disner previously served as Savoy's first female mayor from 2017 to 2021. Her long career in local public service has also included being a Champaign County board member, district director for the former U.S. Representative Tim Johnson, and serving as Savoy Village trustee from 2003 to 2017. She currently serves on the Fire and Police Commission. Brown, who ran for village president unopposed after Disner retired from the position, served as a trustee from 2005 to 2021. Neekum is also a veteran member of the board. Donaldson, the only one seeking the true Senate term, was appointed in April of 2024 following the resignation of Joshua Young, who announced in March that he was moving out of the community. And this has been Cheryl Walker with the News Gazette, Part 1. Please continue to listen. I'll be back in a half an hour. And if you don't, have a good Friday. And thank you for joining us.